Well, good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Groundwater Association Spring Conference, Thinking Big, Innovative Solutions for Groundwater Recharge and Reuse. Many of you know that groundwater pumping statewide is constantly increasing. One estimate shows that every year our cities collectively pump about 1.5 billion gallons more water than they did the year before. And almost all this water is single use. Minnesota communities are very good at providing clean, affordable water to their residents. And aside from occasionally watering their lawn, Minnesota residents are really good at returning that water back to the nearest treatment plant to be discharged to a local river. A fitting example is our local metro area. 40 billion gallons of Mississippi River water are used every year by Minneapolis and St. Paul, but the regional wastewater treatment plants discharge over 90 billion gallons of water a year. And so the difference there is 50 billion gallons of local Minnesota groundwater are exported to the Gulf of Mexico. It's going to take some big thinking to turn that around and keep that water in Minnesota where it belongs. We have a great panel of speakers today who will share with us real-world examples of ways to extend the life of our groundwater. Some will talk about programs that use water more than once. Others will describe the finer points of advanced treatment that can make otherwise undrinkable water fit for human consumption. All of these examples are fully operational projects, not wishful thinking or projections, but working proof that we can get more from our water than what is considered normal today. I hope that in the coming years and decades, projects like these will become the new normal, and it will be the result of folks like you thinking big to secure the future of Minnesota's groundwater. I hope you enjoy today's program. However, not all of these good ideas can be implemented today. Minnesota has strict guidelines when it comes to water reuse, and navigating those rules can be challenging. So to start the day off, we've invited our first speaker to present to us the Water Reuse Support System, Codes, Standards, and Information Sharing. Anita Anderson has 20 years of experience as a water supply engineer with the Minnesota Department of Health. Her primary area of expertise is surface water treatment, specializing in small systems. Currently, she is also working on special projects to implement water reuse in Minnesota in a safe and sustainable way, and to predict the vulnerability of groundwater, drinking water sources to microbial pathogens. She holds a master's degree in environmental engineering from the University of Minnesota and is a registered professional engineer in Minnesota. So please welcome Anita Anderson.
Thank you, Ole, and everyone. I appreciate this opportunity to kind of kick off this day of talking about water reuse because I know there's a lot of exciting things going on with reuse and that we're going to learn a lot from today's presenters. And I appreciate the association putting this together. So I was asked to talk about rules, but first of all, so I named my presentation, the Water Reuse Support System, Codes, Standards, and Information Sharing. Not only because a talk all about rules first thing in the morning can be a potentially rough way to start the day, but also because I really just don't feel that the rules stand on their own. So I've been working to implement rules for quite a few years now, and while I do look back to a rule for clarity and direction, in my day-to-day work, what I'm more grabbing for is that guidance manual full of practical information based on data, experiences, to really get you what you need to know. I also have training, technical information available so that I can stay up on the latest things going on in whatever topic I'm working with. I usually have that expert that I can call, answer any questions. And then we have things such as this, conferences, so that we can share information and collaborate. So I really hope that we can just kind of look at the rules as part of this whole system as we move forward. So today I'll start by giving you a little background on a Clean Water Fund project related to water reuse, in case you're not already familiar with it. Then I'll try and make sure that we're at least remotely on the same page when we're talking water reuse. That can mean a lot of different things to different people. I'll talk briefly about drivers for reuse in Minnesota, mention some Minnesota reuse projects that are going on. Then I will get into the regulations and codes, and then again moving forward with this support system. So there's definitely been a call for agencies to work on water reuse regulations, not just from people trying to implement, but in a few other places. The water sustainability framework that was kind of meant to guide some of the Clean Water Fund work, that called for state agencies to plan for water reuse, and also for MPCA and MDH to set appropriate standards for water reuse applications. In addition, the recent Environmental Quality Board water report also called for agencies to update plumbing codes and treatment standards to allow for safe and practical water reuse. So back in 2013, the agencies got together, started a work group to look at these things. So we've been working on this for a little while, but we really needed a little boost to get the project to the next level, and luckily that came from the Clean Water Fund. So we now have some support to complete this work. The charge is to do a comprehensive assessment of both regulatory and non-regulatory approaches for ensuring safe and sustainable water reuse, and ultimately to make recommendations for practices and policy in Minnesota. So we're kind of on schedule to have our recommendations complete by June of 2017. And while MDH is sponsoring this project, it's definitely a multi-agency effort. All of the water agencies in Minnesota have some role in reuse. So we have all of our water agencies here, also the Met Council and the Water Resources Center from the University of Minnesota. They are members of our work group. So we have agency sponsors from each agency, as well as the technical experts that are on the work group. And of course, they're reaching out to others in their agency to get more information. And we'll also be involving a lot of stakeholders. So that's where you will come in. So kind of how we wrote up our objectives, we really wanted to say, okay, we're supposed to be looking at rules and regulations for water reuse, but really, where are we trying to go? So what is the definition of success in the area of water reuse? And then once we kind of have that vision of success, we can look at what in Minnesota is currently supporting that success. Where are there barriers? What are possible solutions to those barriers? So from that standpoint, then we can develop those recommendations for safe and sustainable water reuse practices and policies. So I think anybody that's worked in the area of water reuse might have gotten hung up on definitions at some point. So the term water reuse actually is kind of claimed by the reclaimed wastewater arena. There's the Water Reuse Association and the Water Reuse Research Foundation, and they're really focused on reuse of reclaimed wastewater. And that term reuse really makes sense there. We definitely have used that water as wastewater, and we want to use it again. So sometimes they don't like that term being used for all these other applications. And you may talk to a stormwater person and they say, well, fine, because I'm not reusing water, I'm harvesting it and I'm using it. So they like to see it more as a first-time use. A lot of times the plumbing codes tend to use alternate source, the term alternate sources of water for gray water and reclaimed wastewater. And again, that makes some sense because it's not our traditional source of water. But then somebody else will say, well, these aren't alternate sources. They're just sources. Everything's water. So then one water is kind of the latest term. And that's probably the direction we're going, is towards one water. But for now, I think the common term is still water reuse. But I guess what our work group is focusing on, and some of these may go in or out of scope through the process, but looking at rainwater harvest, stormwater reuse or harvesting and use, gray water, reclaimed wastewater, and then other things such as foundation water, agricultural, filter backwash, and various industrial processes. And typically we're looking at end uses that are not drinking water uses, so those irrigation, toilet flushing, washing, etc. But drinking water is still definitely on the table. We could use any of these sources ultimately for drinking water, especially if we have an environmental buffer in there somewhere. And then also with groundwater, looking at recharging our sources, also just reducing the use of the groundwater source, but working on infiltration and injection. So all of these things might fall into what we're talking about. So why do we need this in Minnesota? Ole already told us a couple reasons why. But it is, I've gone to a couple of national reuse conferences, and you're a little bit lonely being from the Midwest. Definitely dominated by states in the West that are dry, or saltwater states like Florida. But more and more, it's coming into the whole country. And we definitely know that a lot of areas of our state do not have adequate groundwater, and or we are depleting it faster than we would like. Water quality is also an issue, so people really want to be able to do reuse so that they can implement better stormwater management techniques. This provides a nice way to empty those containers of stormwater so that they're ready for the next rainfall. Of course, we know our water resources are very important to sustainable economic growth. And also, really, the water technology sector is growing in Minnesota and is strong, and water reuse is another avenue for water technology. And we're just interested in environmental stewardship, so we don't want to draw our groundwater sources down so much that they're affecting our wetlands, other things. And then a lot, you'll see from the talks today that a lot of these projects are also very good at building awareness just about water resources in general. People find water reuse interesting and exciting, and so it just brings attention to water resources in general. And I just feel I should also mention, I feel like it is kind of a cool thing to do right now. There are other conservation practices that could be implemented perhaps more easily in some situations, but people are really interested in water reuse. So I just thought we'll get a bunch of examples of water reuse in Minnesota today, but I just thought I'd list some of the projects, and this definitely isn't an exhaustive list. If your project isn't on here, I'm sorry, it wasn't an exclusive thing. These are just some examples to show what's going on. So Shakopee Madwakaton Sioux community is using reclaimed municipal wastewater. They have advanced treatment, discharge it to wetlands, and use it later for irrigation. We have several examples of using reclaimed wastewater for golf course irrigation, also irrigation of non-food crops. And then I believe Mankato will be talking about the energy plant cooling later today. If we look at stormwater harvesting projects, a few examples. Target Field, St. Anthony Village, which uses a combination of filter backwash water and stormwater. Onika Ridge uses stormwater for irrigation of that course. Centerville irrigates a ball field with stormwater. And then the 17th Avenue Residence Hall collects water both from their roof and from some sidewalk surfaces for toilet flushing. Specifically looking more at rainwater harvesting, which is just collecting off of roofs and not other surfaces. Kind of how I got involved in reuse is because of the St. Louis County Garage up in Duluth. They were asking for water quality standards, and that kind of snowballed, and here I am. And then you'll be hearing about CHS Field today, Cottage Grove City Hall, Shars Bluff, and then we know there's also some residences using rainwater, even for drinking. And then some other sources, the new Lake Vermilion State Park will be reusing gray water. Golden Plump is currently piloting, they already do a lot of reuse, but they're piloting a process to actually treat their processed water back to drinking water standards so that they can use it for final product rinse. And there's a lot of other industrial examples. So, why are we here then? All this reuse is happening. What's the problem? So we can see that almost any source of reuse is happening in Minnesota. So almost anything is possible, but I think if you talk to any of those people that implemented those projects, they would not necessarily say it was easy. So that's what we're trying to improve. I think you can read those. So as part of the earlier work group, we worked with MnTap to do a little survey of water reuse, kind of a broad survey. And when we asked what are the barriers to water reuse, so these the ones on the top line were the top three barriers. Cost is number one. These projects are generally still going to be more expensive because we don't charge a lot for drinking water or use of groundwater right now. And then operations and maintenance were a concern. So we're really creating new infrastructure in some cases. So that's adding to ongoing O&M issues. So regulatory and code was number three. We weren't number one. I was kind of excited about that, but definitely on the top tier. And then some other things, lack of design standards, just as kind of new, so people, contractors aren't familiar with it. Again, that lack of water quality standards, not knowing if treatment is needed or how much. And then other concerns at the bottom, public perception. It's probably especially true with the wastewater reuse and public health concerns. So these are all barriers that we can work as a group to resolve. But I will talk mostly about regulations here now. So just kind of taking a look at, so we have a lot of water agencies. We have kind of compartmentalized a little bit. So this just kind of gives a broad overview. I know there's some other agencies, some other rules, but this is just kind of a broad brush look at things. So we at MDH, responsible for Safe Drinking Water Act, and that protects drinking water from the source to the tap. We also implement the well code and just other general public health standards. The DNR is responsible for water appropriation permits, ecosystem protection, water supply planning and conservation. Department of Labor and Industry, they're more of the in-building drainage and oversight through the plumbing code. They also make sure that those systems are safe and sanitary. And the plumbing board is the entity that would review any variances to plumbing code. And then a pollution control agency, of course, is implementing the Clean Water Act. And they're more concerned with what is going into the environment. So they're looking at water quality standards for that, wastewater permitting, and stormwater permitting. So you can maybe see why we might have some regulatory challenges initially. It's just that we're reuse is going to cross a lot of those lines. It's going to circle through those jurisdictions, so we need to straighten that out, but that should be relatively doable. One thing that's made it difficult to really set our direction is that there are no national regulations for reuse right now. So in some ways that can be freeing. We're not tied to that. But at the same time, every state and city has kind of been coming up with their own direction. So we have a lot of codes, we have a lot of guidance out there, and it goes many different directions. So like when we in Minnesota, we're starting to look at this, we're looking at all these other options, what other states are doing, but it wasn't clear why they were so different or what was the basis for those differences or why was one state choosing to go one way or another. So that's confusing. And also it kind of eliminates the fact there's really no base federal funding for water reuse right now either. And that also leads to, as we were trying to judge those, all the guidance that's out there, we just really felt there wasn't enough data on the public health or resource risk for us to do a good analysis on that. Lots of stuff going on, so that is improving, but still a little bit lacking. And really, as agencies, we all know we've got competing priorities. And really, although the interest in reuse is increasing, say, relative to the number of wells that are getting drilled or all the other work we're already doing, it still seemed like water reuse was a relatively low number of requests. And again, I kind of mentioned that some other conservation efforts aren't really maximized. So if someone comes to me and is really interested in conservation, I at least had some other tools to provide them, such as optimizing irrigation, other things. So that's maybe why things haven't moved farther than they have so far. So just to talk a little bit, you know, we've tried to do some diagrams of all the jurisdictions and where you'd have to go, and they really wouldn't fit on a slide. So I just decided to kind of talk about really what the issues are there. And sometimes we've listed these and called them barriers, or we've called them gaps, or we've called them different things, but kind of a discussion in our last work group meeting, Brian actually said, maybe these aren't barriers, maybe they're there for a reason. But we really just wanted to keep the discussion open, keep all the options open, not bias our thoughts one way or the other. So these are just the current state, and we can judge from now whether we want to keep these things, whether they support that successive reuse, or whether they don't. So currently, like I said, things are possible, but they often have to go through a variance process. So again, some people might see that as a slowdown, as a barrier, but it was really that way because we wanted to have a conversation. You know, these applications are very unique. We didn't know a lot about them. The expertise is still growing, so that's why they're currently in a variance process. We're probably ready to move out of that in a lot of cases. Again, another thing is that approval might vary depending on your location. So plumbing code is delegated to different authorities. So one city might be comfortable with reuse and another one might not be. So you might be dependent on where you are as to what you can do, and we'd like to make that more consistent in general. We've heard that the water appropriation permit and reporting process can discourage people. Others might see that permitting process as just a good way to track things, a good way to support the overall system. So looking at both sides of that. We have some concerns over the potential health and resource risks. I mentioned that. There's also just a lot of concerns over future regulations. So someone implementing a system today doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow, so they might be hesitant to do anything right now. Taking a look at stormwater, there's not really comprehensive tracking of stormwater reuse right now. People need to meet their permits, but it's not dictated how they do that, and there's not always a lot of tracking that goes on with those reuse systems. Not always a lot of oversight and monitoring of existing systems. Again, we're at a point where we don't know how much of that is needed exactly, but it would at least provide us some data so we know more about these systems. And then another issue is that kind of the expertise that we have in our state agencies is not always in the area of authority. So say right now, our wastewater experts are the Pollution Control Agency in general, and yet kind of the authority for doing in-building water reuse falls more under the plumbing code than under MPCA. So how do we get those experts working together, work where the authority is, so that we can get these projects moving forward? So I did want to take a look at a couple of things that I think are easier to implement in Minnesota and why, what lessons we can learn from them. So this reuse criteria for reclaimed wastewater, this is guidance from the MPCA, and this has been around for over 40 years. So people can do this now. So, you know, what about this made it possible for MDH and MPCA to agree on these criteria so long ago? A couple things there. They're based on California Title 22, so they were vetted in another state, so that was a good step. You also see that it kind of includes three different things. There's minimum treatment, there's reuse permit limits, and there's types of reuse. So I think it's easy to agree with reclaimed wastewater that a treatment step is necessary. So that's one thing. With a lot of the other uses, there's a lot of discussion whether any treatment is needed or not. Here, we're pretty sure you need some treatment. So those treatment steps are outlined. And then for the reuse permit limits, those are indicator organisms, other monitoring parameters you can measure. And those are really designed to make sure that your treatment steps are working properly. So we have this combination of treatment and a way to check on the treatment to ensure that the water is usable. And there's actually some public health basis for the treatment and water quality standards. They did a study, looked at how many viruses were removed in these processes. And so it's based on 5-log removal of viruses, and that was determined to be what is needed to make this water safe for these types of reuse. So we have that basis for the numbers. And then we also look, it's kind of taken a tiered approach. So different water qualities, depending on what you're going to be using it for and how much public exposure there is or environmental exposure. So if we're using edible food crops, toilet flushing, things where there's more exposure to the public, then we have to go to that tertiary treatment or that extra step of treatment. I think that's what I wanted to say about that. So that one, like I mentioned, has been around. And I wanted to also just mention that it really exemplifies this fit for purpose concept, which I think is important in reuse. You know, we always say we don't need drinking water for toilet flushing, but we want some quality there. But if we're going to drink it, obviously we need to meet drinking water standards, but there's all this range of water quality needed for all these uses in between. So the other thing that's relatively easy right now, or got easier, is rainwater harvesting, or non-potable rainwater catchment systems, I should say. So our new Minnesota Plumbing Code went into effect in January. It was based on the Uniform Plumbing Code, which had a chapter for rainwater catchment systems. We did amend it, or it was amended, to include some water quality standards and treatment requirements that weren't in the Uniform Plumbing Code. So again, people might see that as a burden, but it was something that was needed to get everybody comfortable with moving this forward at this time. And that can change in the future based on new information. It was also changed to have all these applications go through the central office, basically, so go through Department of Labor and Industry rather than the delegated plumbing authorities. And again, that's for tracking, and so that we can build that expertise in the central, ultimately later to disseminate that out. But this will bring more consistency to the ability to do rainwater catchments. And there is also a chapter in the Uniform Plumbing Code on the alternate sources, like I mentioned before, so gray water, reclaimed wastewater. That chapter was not adopted at this time because it was felt there were some jurisdictional conflicts with other rules in Minnesota, so we need to take a look at those. Those things can still happen, again, through the variance process, but that's something we're working towards being able to adopt in the future. So where are we as we move forward? There's definitely a lot of resources out there. We don't have to start from scratch. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We're definitely looking at everything that's out there, evaluating it. Like I say, there's pretty good guidelines from EPA on reclaimed wastewater reuse. I think they're getting pushed to do regulation, but I don't know how soon that will happen. But at least there's good guidance available, and again, a very strong research engine behind reclaimed wastewater use. And that's, you know, probably because that's just a high volume opportunity and really has a relatively consistent water quality. There's also a lot of other guidance documents available for all those other sources of reuse. Again, Met Council did a great job here in Minnesota doing the Stormwater Reuse Guide, a great tool. The American Rainwater Catchment Systems Association just came out with a new manual for rainwater harvesting that should be useful to the plumbing code people. There's a good guidance manual from American Water Works on aquifer storage and recovery. And there's other guidance and research on use of gray water and what the public health impacts are. So we have a lot of things to start from. So just kind of to summarize the current state, it's a little bit of a complex situation that needs consolidation and integration. But we do have a lot of research, information, guidance available. There still are some missing pieces that we need to fill with research or other work. And really, we just now need to decide, you know, how this applies to Minnesota and, again, how it will feed into our vision of success for water reuse in our state. I did just want to mention kind of one of those gaps. We still feel there's lacking public health data. So why are we so concerned with reuse, especially when we're not drinking it? Again, you know, that's a picture of stormwater being sprayed for irrigation. Someone's standing there near the spray. So again, as a public health practitioner, it just makes me a little nervous. Having seen the water quality of stormwater in general, there could be bacteria, there could be lots of other things in that water. We know Legionella is spread through aerosolization of water. It's also kind of the leading cause of waterborne illness in the state, or in the nation right now. So that's just kind of what comes to our mind. But, you know, part of that nervousness is just because it's an unknown. We haven't measured Legionella in stormwater. So we just need to start gathering that pathogen data. But just other reasons, we know we have irrigation outbreaks now with food crops, just using natural waters. So we presume that would be also a risk if in reuse situations. We know cross connections can be an issue. So if you have an accidental connection between your drinking water supply line, your non-drinking water supply line, as we get more infrastructure going, we just need to be very mindful of not cross connecting those. And that's definitely been a problem in places like Australia that are really implementing water reuse, so something to watch out for. Again, chemical contaminants. We don't know a lot about the levels of those in some of these sources. And then just kind of an example, when we're looking at pumping things back into the aquifer, if we're changing the water chemistry, we just need to be mindful of that. And I just want, this bottom picture is probably kind of hard to see, but the title there is Elephants Will Not Drink Recycled Water in Denver. So they do a lot of water recycling in Denver, but they found, one problem that Peter Cartwright will be talking about later, I think, is salt content in reused wastewater. And so they were finding maybe it was killing some of the trees in the park, and then that just brought the attention to the salt levels, and maybe the elephants shouldn't be drinking that. So potential concerns for both humans and animals. So kind of another component of the Clean Water Fund project, part of that funding is going to do a risk assessment. So MDH, again, is leading that, working with the University of Minnesota. We're trying to determine both the potential microbial risk and also looking some at chemicals, the risk posed to human health from certain stormwater and rainwater reuse practices, specifically in Minnesota. So one thing we deal with in Minnesota that a lot of these other states doing reuse don't deal with is cold weather, other factors. So we're just trying to look a little bit Minnesota specific. So right now we're looking at two scenarios of non-potable water reuse. The first being that irrigation of an athletic field near a school with stormwater. And then the other is toilet flushing using harvested rainwater. So maybe some of you have seen the presentation by the University of Minnesota. They're starting to get their pathogen data in now. And really, so far, it looks like it will likely be relatively low risk and or that risk should be easily managed. So this is great information. Of course, it's only on two systems. We'd love to have data from a lot more systems and working to do that. And then the other step is once we have that data, we kind of have to determine, well, what risk is acceptable? So in drinking water, our risk standard tends to be 1 in 10,000 illnesses per year, or if it's something cancer-causing, much lower risk. The beach standard sets a risk more like 36 in 1,000 swimmers might get sick. That's how they base their risk analysis. So we'll kind of have to decide, really, as a group here, as a society, we know we're getting benefits from water reuse, so what level of risk will be acceptable? So we'll be working on that and looking for input again in the future. I did want to mention another thing that's going to help us out, I believe. The San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, I think, is a really pioneer in water reuse. And so they also saw that, this water quality standards, the hesitancy of public health people, as a barrier to implementing reuse in their state. And so they said, well, we could do our own thing, but we really want to push this to a national standard. So they put together this public health collaborative. We at MDH are participating on that panel. And they just produced, their goal was to establish a set of guidelines that can be used by public officials in developing on-site water reuse programs. They're kind of focused on a little bit more of that in-building reuse. And their goal is to address water quality parameters, monitoring parameters, those end uses, as well as the operational requirements and permitting. So this should be a great resource for us. I just got the draft report yesterday, and we will meet next week to review that with the expert panel, so I'm excited to take a look at that. And they're also pushing, really, for that national standard, so they just started a new project with the Water Research Institute to bring things to that national level. So I just wanted to come back to what the work group came up with for what does success look like in the area of water reuse. And I'll say, these might be a little rough around the edges right now. This was our brainstorm, still being refined, but we also are really looking for input in order to refine that vision just so we know really what direction we want to be heading here. But a few of the things we came up with, I'll talk about individually here in a moment. Integration of governance, integration into infrastructure and services, quantified benefit. We want reuse to become more common practice. We want it to be safe and sustainable, economically beneficial, and kind of number one and number seven there go together, the clear regulatory pathway. So we've been working on this, integrating this into all the agency regulation systems, getting the agencies to work together to simplify the process, and also seeing, water reuse is a good thing. If it's something we want to promote, maybe we can credit that in some way or at least account for it. We also need to integrate it into infrastructure and services. Again, most of these systems will be adding infrastructure, but this is probably a good time to be looking at this. There's a big bonding initiative to upgrade our water and wastewater infrastructure, so this would be a good time to incorporate water reuse. And we also just need to integrate it with utilities. Only mentioned our water and wastewater utilities doing a great job of providing safe drinking water, getting rid of our wastewater safely. So we need to make sure we're working with them because water reuse is going to impact their business. It's going to affect the volume that people are using. It might affect the quality of the water. If you're taking out all the cleaner gray water, then they're left with the really sludgy stuff. We need to make sure that still moves through the pipes, things like that. And it's also going to affect their bottom lines if people aren't using as much water. And I mentioned the cross-connection control as well. We need to protect those systems. Again, we really want to better quantify the benefits to water resources just so that we can, make a more clear decision, when does water reuse make sense, when does that you get a big benefit that makes the cost justified. Again, water reuse in some cases can be higher energy, so we want to take that into consideration. That's another balance to just use of water. But we want reuse to be implemented where it's feasible economically, environmentally, and protective of public health. Again, we want water reuse to be more of the norm. We don't need to use treated drinking water all the time for non-potable purposes. We're in the pioneer phase, I would say. We want to try and move past that. We want to make sure education and incentives are used to help mainstream water reuse. And we need to continue to work for public acceptance, especially in certain cases. So safe, sustainable, sanitary, not only are just those public health concerns addressed that I talked about, but also that these systems are maintained long-term. I think we've seen sometimes with these projects, someone's real excited about it, they get it implemented, and then they leave, they go somewhere else, and the person that's left with the project is like, well, I don't like this, this is extra work. So we want to make sure that, people are, that the long-term, long-range planning is there, that people are, responsible for these systems, again, in the long-term, despite changes in staffing and so on. Again, we want the public to agree on what the acceptable risk is. We want systems to be sustainable and beneficial. Big, broad words, but general idea there. And we want these systems to be as efficient as they can be, working to save energy and save water. And really, you know, to make these economically feasible, I mean, one thing, you know, we just don't value our water enough. I think that's been said many times. But, you know, until we really charge the true cost, maybe for our drinking water or our wastewater, water reuse isn't going to look economically beneficial until we're really looking at all of the true costs involved in the way we do things now. And so we want it to be such that it can become standard design practice. And we just want to have those tools so that we can do that cost-benefit analysis when we're looking at a project. And really what I talked about a lot earlier was that clear regulatory pathway, standardizing the approval process, making things understandable, making sure those systems are in place to guide the operation and maintenance, making sure or have the level that we feel we need of monitoring and testing. Again, have that overall support network. And again, that research is continuing and that we're able to communicate those results. And so, again, that was kind of our agency work group vision of success. I feel like it's supported, again, by our survey results. So when we asked people what resources are needed to implement water reuse, again, financial was number one. But along with that, the design standards, the technical assistance, examples of successful ordinances and rules, information on treatment options, case studies, peer experiences, and so on. So I know Ole said, what can people do to support this process moving forward? Plenty of opportunities. Pick your favorite area, your area of expertise to assist in moving water reuse forward. And again, as part of the Clean Water Fund project particularly, we're definitely looking for input. Will be plenty of opportunities, we hope, for that input. We will have a stakeholder advisory group to review our recommendations. So that advisory group might be smaller just for logistical reasons, but certainly anybody that is interested has a chance to weigh in on this through meetings, through surveys, through public comment periods. Many of you may know there's a Freshwater Society workshop coming up on May 2nd. And so, you know, they're advertising that not only just as a conference for disseminating information, but really a workshop to get feedback from people, to get that input. So we're really excited about that opportunity. And I think Jen Cater was going to be here. She's in the back there. If you have questions, find her. And right now, if you have immediate comments, you can use this kind of convoluted email to email us. There's also a link to it, so you don't necessarily have to remember it. And we also will be having a Gov delivery system set up soon that you can sign up for to stay in touch with the project. We do have a website. You know, this is kind of more just a working group website. And we have a vision for having a Better Water Reuse Minnesota website. You know, can we reuse that Minnesota or some more exciting slogan that really is a good resource for everybody. But, you know, we don't have all the information ready to do something like that. So for now, I could have put the web link on there, but again, that's complicated. So if you look for MDH, our Clean Water Fund page, you should be able to find this project. It has our meeting notes. It has our meeting dates, which are open to the public. It has the email. It soon will have the Gov delivery sign up. So feel free to check that out, get more information. It has my phone number. Always feel free to contact me. And with that, I will take any questions.
Well, we have questions. Please use the mic so Lanny and myself will be bringing that around so everybody can hear you.
So it sounds like other countries are probably further along. For example, in Australia, you mentioned, do they actually have two water lines coming into different houses, one for the toilets, one for drinking water?
Yes, in a lot of areas they do. So definitely way to go. Again, great opportunities, but just need to be mindful of both the cost and those cross connections. But certainly we're looking at those examples.
I don't know if this is more a question or a comment, but when I was working on the LRT project, they were using a lot of stormwater infiltration in their design. And one of the problems that we had was along that entire corridor was contamination. And so it was, for those of us involved in trying to get the no association determinations for the people who own the property, it was, it seemed like one side was doing one thing and another side was doing another. I just wanted to know if we'd be talking about contamination at all and how that.
Yeah, so I know we've talked about, water reuse can be good in those areas where infiltration maybe isn't as ideal because of contamination issues. Is that kind of what you're getting at, or just? Right. Yeah, so that's definitely one of those things we want to be able to weigh in, and that's kind of a driver for reuse because infiltration is not always a good option. So thank you.
Yeah, I appreciated the comment about the real cost of water. And I assume you guys have been thinking about the timing of all that. If we ask the public to increase their cost of water after we start a reuse program, that might not go so well. I assume you want to comment on that? I mean, if we're paying more and we're using less, that kind of concept.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a major issue with utilities and water reuse is, that's true with conservation practices. Who was just talking about that Monday? Somebody, Ali from Met Council, any water customer in any situation, I'm conserving, but now the water utility has to increase their rates to pay for that. So that's, and you guys have a, thought you had a new project kind of specific to that. Definitely something we are tracking, and now would be the time to try and do that. But, on the converse side, we have the mayor of the city somewhere that's, running the sewer plant because they don't want to raise the rates anymore. So we know there's places that, it's really going to be hard to afford to raise the rates. So it's kind of a big picture dilemma.
There's been a lot of news about Denver and Colorado and rain barrel regulation. I'm wondering here in Minnesota, is there a discussion about thresholds for oversight on rainwater reuse in particular? At what scale does oversight become necessary in terms of volume, in terms of application, residential versus commercial? Are those conversations happening at the state level yet?
Yeah, I would say those conversations are happening, as part of this project especially. I thought the plumbing code looked at so many plumbing codes, I'm not sure what ours actually says, but yeah, sometimes those, volumes below 300 gallons are removed, and it's really not that they're, the problem is, it's still kind of important to consider it, and there should be best practices there, but it's not feasible to enforce a regulation down to that level. So that's one, that's really kind of the main cutoff thing. But definitely something we're looking at is scaling. And
I believe Minnesota has a non-degradation clause for surface water, where even if you can meet the numerical discharge standards, you're still not supposed to degrade existing beneficial uses. And there's appropriate weasel words in there, of course, but anyhow, do we have something similar for groundwater, that the non-degradation clause, and should we?
That's a good question. I don't know if anybody, looks like Suzanne knows the answer.
As a West Central regulator of permitting, I am familiar with some of the reuse from wastewater in some of the small cities. Have you begun a database of water reuse that we can access?
We have begun a database. We don't have it accessible yet. There's definitely areas that are easier to track, so I think we have a much better handle on reclaimed wastewater. The stormwater projects, again, haven't always been tracked, again, because those are a little harder to find. But certainly, if you know of projects, anybody that knows of projects, email me or call so we can keep building that database. But that's a good idea to get that out on our website so that people can let us know about ones we don't know about. But yeah, that's a good idea, and that's really how we'll be able to share information, is having people know where this is happening so that they can talk to their neighbors who are already doing things that they might not know they're doing.
Okay, I think we'll cut the questions off there. Thank you very much for sharing that information with us.